Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Alrighty, hour number two on the show. What's happening? Tiki and Tierney. It's the Tiki and Tierney Show. Coming to you from the Rocket Mortgage Studio. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. I mean, just a jam-packed weekend. I mean, when was the last time? Think about this. And I wish Santa had a microphone. But when was the last time this show started a show during a major for golf and did not mention a thing about that major in the first hour of the show? The answer is absolutely never. That's how busy we've been. I mean, the Sixers stuff with Simmons, who you have to trade, Doc Rivers, who is criminally overrated at this point, Embiid, who's pissed off. I'll get to the Nets thoroughly, very, very much in the third hour. I'm going to get to something with the Supreme Court and the NCAA as well. But I gotta tell you this. Only this could happen to you, boy. There is nobody else in the nobody else in the world that this would happen to, other than me. Now, I'll try to condense this because for 9 years, basically, you've heard about my horrendous golf, my love affair with golf that gives me no love back, right? Between the back surgery, between playing lefty and then trying to play righty and then trying to play lefty, that's the long and short. It's been miserable, right? So long story short, about I had one lesson left over, right, from a four-pack that I got at my club a year ago. And, you know, it didn't really go too well. I'm like, I don't even know why I'm going to get the fourth one here because I'm going backwards. So, whatever. Season's over. It's getting cold out. I'll just bag it. Maybe I'll use it next year. So, this year, this is actually funny. I mean, I'm sure a lot of you guys can relate to this. And girls, of course. And then, it was like late March, and it was a real cold, damp, dank, dark day. It was wet in the Northeast. And I'm just, I'm working out in my basement. I've got my clubs down there. I'm swinging. I'm like, oh, God, this is the year, which is what I say every year about golf. This is the year. This is the year. This is the year. Never been the year, but I always say that this is the year because I'm not a quitter. So I said, I got one more lesson. So I hit up the pro, Graham, great dude, lefty like me. And he says, listen, we have it set up. It's too cold, but we have it set up in a clubhouse. I'm like, I'm there. It's like the next day. So I go in, and a lot of you struggle with golf. Golf is very hard. No one struggles with golf the way I struggle with golf. I mean, I have hit shots that go backwards. I know that seems impossible to comprehend. Sideways shots, backward shots, swing and miss shots. Now, when I hit it, it's a glorious thing. It's far. But, man, it is the worst. Anyway. So I take like five swings. I'm already like sweating and I'm panting and I'm grinding up and I'm grabbing the club, getting mad. He goes, all right, dude, just do yourself a favor. Take a half swing. Just take a half swing. All right, you know. And I'm pretty athletic, so I, you know, after about two or three, I'm getting it on the center face, right? Thwack, thwack. And I see it on the monitor, 7-iron, 150 yards. I don't know how accurate it is. Pretty accurate. Smash factor, if you know what that is. He's like, that's a really good number. I'm like, all right, am I tapping into something? So I've been playing this year with a half swing, right? Almost like John Rahm, ironically, who won the championship. Get to him in a little bit. And it's been going because I'm centering up the ball almost all the time. Now, I'm giving up some distance on the tee. I always used to try to avoid my irons because I'd always shank them. Now I love hitting an iron. My short game's always been good. You've always heard me say that, or at least reliable, good relative. Pretty tight, though. Pretty tight. And I've been hitting the ball in the middle of the face. And I've been going to the range like a beast, you know, after the show, before the show, early in the morning, drop the kids off. Finally have my guys trip this year, right? This is the point. Now, we usually go down south and fly, but even though we're all vaccinated, we punted one more year. No need to fly if you don't have to. So we rented a house in the Northeast, nice big house on a lake. We do our fishing contest, you know, drink our faces off at night, and we play golf every day, right? Catch up, my buddies, couple from college and high school. The first day I shoot an 86, it was an easy course. Like, the slope was like, I think it was 117. It was really as easy. If I'm saying it's easy, it was pretty easy. The next day, I'm looking at 91. All right, so hey, I'm at night by the fire pit. Hey, your boy's coming along, feeling good. The next day, this is where this will never happen to anybody but me. First hole, pipe one down to shoot off the tee, right? Dead red. Next one, I pull, I think it was an 8-iron, pull it like right as a lefty, pull it to the right of the pin. Third shot from about, and it was a hard, I had to go over, say, tough shot. Hole out, birdie on one. If I played 1,500 rounds of golf in my life, which at this point I'm pretty convinced that I have, I think that I've started with a birdie on maybe five in my life, right? Birdie one. Then I get, so I finish up good, knocking around straight, a lot of pars, right? No blow-up holes, no triples. 42 on the front. Feeling, and I've had that before, feeling good. 10th hole. Par. 11th hole, par 3, birdie. Next hole, birdie. Now, your boy, I'm not drinking. I'm not doing anything. Now your boy's starting to get deep into his own head like, whoa. And I'll never forget, on the 12th hole, before I actually hit my approach shot and then hit the birdie putt, my buddy Frank goes, B, this is weird. He goes, my range finder says 763 yards to the hole. I'm like, I don't give a damn what it says. I'm coming off a birdie, and I'm sitting in the fairway. I don't care. That it's a cheap watch. I don't care, right? Of course, now he was right, mind you. He was right. I hit it on the green, got a little bit of a favorable bounce, hit a sick, brutal down, get birdie. Par, birdie, birdie off the 42. We get to the next tee box. The next tee box says 15. I've only played 10, 11, 12. What the hell just happened? So he was right. We went to the wrong hole. Now, so did our buddies who were in front of us, but they quickly were able to recalibrate. I don't know, and it was tricky. Whatever reason, I didn't notice it. Nobody noticed it. We went from 10, which we played properly. How could you not? And instead of going to 10 to 11, which was to the right, we went to, I guess that would have been 12. Whatever it equated to, we missed three holes. So now I'm sitting there saying, you have to be kidding me. I'm looking at my scorecard. I see a 4, a 2, and a 2. I'm a 4, 2, and a 3. I'm sitting there with a 9 through three holes, and this guy sucks. Off of 42 on the front. Now I'm like, how am I going to go? What if we go to play the other holes, and there's four cars on the, what am I going to do? I'm finishing this round no matter what, right? What happens? Oh, yeah. We finish up. Now, of course, once double bogey, I get on the next hole, because now my mind's a mess. We finish up. Great, great, great guy, the pro. I said, hey, listen, I'm in the middle of my best round. I didn't bore him with my story like I'm probably boring you, but I said, I'm in the middle of my best round ever. We somehow skipped three holes. Can we please go and play? No problem. Let me just check. Yep, you're good to go. So the three holes that we missed, that we go back to play after we get off the 18th hole, double bogey, par, double bogey. So I got an 83, a little lucky, but an 83. And it was the most sideways, twisted, wacky 83. You could, if it was a better golfer or not a mental midget, I would have been in the 70s, which for me is actually unfathomable, really. All right. It's also unfathomable to think that at this point, student athletes are not getting paid. Well, I mean, you know, when you're the NCAA, let me transition to this. Now, I'll be honest with you. This, Tiki loves this. Tiki's back tomorrow, by the way. Tiki loves this stuff. For whatever reason, I'm not going to lie to you. This doesn't particularly move me. It never has, and it never will. I got some scholarship money, right? Tiki had a full ride. I did not. Baseball players usually don't get full rides. I had some money, though. you know, my parents weren't broke. So I, you know, anything I needed, I pretty much had. Great school. You know, we got a couple of pair of spikes, you know, always had food, had some nice gear. You know, this is the mid 90s. I was fine. I was cool. I walked around campus wearing stuff that said Marist Baseball, and I was fine. I understand things are very different now. So I understand that this really had to come to a head, and it has, because on today, the Supreme Court unanimously ruled 9-0. When's that happen? 9-0 in favor of college athletes seeking unlimited benefits tied to education. Obviously a landmark case. Now, see, the thing about this, and it's not limiting to just basketball or football. It's everything, which is the way it should be. Now, I don't really know how this is going to play. I really don't. There's no limit yet. The NCAA actually wrote, this is actually a pretty interesting comment from Justice Kavanaugh. What did he say? He said, all right, let me read this for you. He said, the NCAA and its member colleges maintain important traditions that have become part of the fabric of America, but those traditions alone cannot justify the NCAA's decision to build a massive money-raising enterprise on the backs of student-athletes who are not fairly compensated. Basically saying, they're making a ton of loot, and the kids who are doing all the work are making nothing. He's right. So this is, again, Justice Kavanaugh. Nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay their workers fair market rate on the theory that the product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate. And under ordinary principles of antitrust law, it is not evident why college sports should be any different. And he concludes it with, the NCAA is not above the law. He's right. Now, this has to go down as the biggest legal defeat. Something, I don't know if you remember this, back in 1984, is the NCAA versus the Board of Regents that basically allowed the schools to monetize the rights to televise football games. That was, up until this, by far, the biggest case. Now this supersedes this. This will have long-ranging impacts. As we know, currently, this includes only tuition, room, board, and cost of attendance. Now, what's interesting, and this is where it's very unclear, very nebulous still, but schools, all right, can now offer internships, postgraduate scholarships, and the like to lure athletes to campus. So now, football and basketball is almost too easy, but I'll take my sport. Let's say I'm the baseball coach at, I don't know, it doesn't really matter the school. Let me take, I'll say St. John's. I'm the baseball coach at St. John's. Hey, you know what? There's a pitcher, one of the public schools in the area, you know, full ride, you know, his kids are legit, has a chance to get drafted. You know what though? Not only do you have your full ride with a letter of intent, but upon graduation, we guarantee you this internship or this affiliation with this program. And you can document that. You can actually, it's part of the package. So the package gets wider, which means the pitch to the players gets deeper, all right, gets broader. Also, they will be able to offer electronic equipment, which opens up a whole new door, right? What else here? Now, all right, is there a scenario? This is the question. They don't know the answer to this yet. Is there a scenario in which a car could be given to an athlete who lives a certain distance from campus or has class in a certain area of town? Now, even though my college, Marist, which is a great school, I love Marist, and it's a great school, it's relatively small. I think now there's about maybe 6-ish thousand undergrads, maybe. But even at Marist, there was about, if I remember this correctly, in Fishkill, which I feel like was about 20 minutes from campus, there was, I was journalism. It wasn't anything that impacted me directly, but there was another, you know, function of the school, an outlet, major. If that's another school, are you able to now say, well, for so-and-so to be able to get to that part of their curriculum, we need to supply them with a car? They're not sure. Quite possibly, maybe. So, you know, this is huge. It's obviously, it's overdue. It's overdue. I think that the one thing that will remain unchanged, I think, is that, you know, the schools with the deepest pockets and the smartest minds and, you know, the best boosters in terms of diversity, like the, whether it's job placement, internships, just a broad net of resources, those are the schools that I would think theoretically would have an advantage over the other schools, even though all of the schools are obviously now playing by these rules based on the 9-0 ruling by the Supreme Court. So, I mean, I would never fight this. Of course, I'm with it, and I'm for the student athlete to get something. I really hope we don't get to a point, and I don't think we're there yet, but do I really want to see even the star quarterback for, you know, an athletic department with an operating budget of like $200 million like Texas? Do I want to really see the starting quarterback or the point guard, you know, make $150,000 in endorsements? It's not that I don't want to see that. I don't not want to see that. But I don't necessarily long to see that. I'm somewhere in the middle. I know that that kind of sounds odd. Like, I'm not trying to take money out of their pocket. But I'm not trying to turn the SEC and the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and the Big 12 into the NFL, really, for lack of a better framing. So I think that that's next. I think this was an initial step into the pool. And, you know, once we work through some of the, you know, things that we need to work through, I think you'll just see more and more and more and more. And, you know, I think I'm not saying I wouldn't have my hand out. I would. I'm not trying to be disingenuous. I never play that act on the radio. Like, I've even gone so far as to say, hell, if I was a big-time recruit for a sport that generated real money and somebody was looking to give me money, I would have taken every penny. And we weren't broke, and I still would have taken every penny. Would have taken every penny. And I would have had a sweet ride. I probably wouldn't have invested properly. I probably would have been a knucklehead with that money, you know, admittedly, at that age. But I would have taken it. So I'm not here to preach from the pulpit and say, no. Books and tuition, that's enough. You have a good laptop that they supply, and, you know, they give you four pairs of sneakers and a training table to eat at any time of the day. It's got to be more than that. It's got to be more equitable. I just fear that once that seesaw starts to tilt, and it's going, it already is, based on the 9-0 decision, goes a little more in that direction, it could possibly, you know, flip out of control. But we'll see. But that's where we are with that. All right. You know, coming up, I was going to get to the Suns-Clippers here, but I've got to get into the Nets, because the first hour I did all Simmons and all Doc, all right? I'm getting to the Nets now. Getting into Durant, obviously getting by extension into the Bucks, but we're talking about that series, and we're talking about it next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, Saturday, you got a full day and night of sports beginning at 1 Eastern, 10 Pacific on CBS with action of the WNBA. Dallas and Washington hook up at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific. Big names like Kepka, DeChambeau. How about DeChambeau getting an 8? He just fell apart. He melted at the U.S. Open. Dustin Johnson competed at the Travelers' Chance, and I'm pretty sure championship. I think DJ won that a year ago. Then in primetime at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, it's another superstar Saturday night with Racing Under the Lights at the Camping World SRX Series. That is all day, literally all day Saturday, coming up on CBS. All right, Teke and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. Teke is out. My boy's back tomorrow. So we will be back after Me finally taking a few days last week to recharge, replug, get back into it. Feel great. Hopefully you guys enjoyed all the games the past week or so that I wasn't around to discuss with Teague, but I was obviously watching. All right, so now listen. First of all, I do think it's important to correct one misnomer. Like, the Bucks were supposed to win this series. I don't know how people are missing that. The Bucks were supposed to win this series. Once Kyrie Irving came down and basically twisted his ankle in a direction that will not allow him to play basketball, even if they won the series, he wasn't playing next series. I don't believe. I think he may be done for the season, actually. Now, he's officially done anyway, but even if they advance, I don't think Kyrie Irving was going to be good to go. He looked banged up. So, without Kyrie Irving for 90-ish percent of the series, with James Harden, who most of it was a decoy, showed some signs as it got a little deeper, but still didn't have the burst, they didn't have the trust to really get to the rack and be James Harden. He was, 40% of what he usually is. If the Bucks didn't win, then, Budenholzer probably should have been fired and probably would have been. Here's what I don't get. Like, we sit here all the time, and this is why I laugh. I laugh. Remember when, now he kind of took it back, but remember when Kyrie Irving said, we don't need a coach? Remember when Kyrie Irving said that? Oh, we don't really need a coach. We don't really have a coach. It's a collaboration. All right, it's a collaboration. Okay. It's a collaboration maybe for 82 games when, talent generally wins out. There's no in-season or in-series two or three times within a given week adjustments, sometimes radical adjustments, That doesn't happen in the regular season. You play a team, They usually, most teams, including the Nets, are disinterested, have an aversion to defense during the regular season. And then the teams that have, maybe a D and three guy, a bit of a defensive-minded point guard, maybe a big, certainly like Gobert and some others that can play some defense, they'll start to shine. And the scores will stop being 147 to 139. It'll more resemble an NBA game, which is what many of us grew up with, right? But while coaching might not matter that much during the regular season, you better believe it matters now. And I just want to point something out. Listen, anybody could get on the radio and say, or TV, and in this case, both. Anybody can say, oh, my God, I mean, Kevin Durant was unbelievable. Oh, Kevin Durant, man, I mean, he enhanced his legacy in defeat, which is true. And that is unique. That's a unique statement. How many players are actually able to kind of reposition, craft a new conversation about them, even when they lose, especially in a sport that is guided 100% on championships at this point? I mean, if you're in the NBA, you don't win a championship, you're a bum, which obviously we know is not the truth, but that's the way it's positioned by many. All right. So yes, Kevin Durant did all that, but that's the easy stuff. You know what you should really be fixated on? Like, if I'm a Nets fan, what I'd be thoroughly angered about, first of all, you had three players play a collective 20 minutes in an overtime game in a deep series. Seven games, overtime, thanks to Kevin Durant's heroics, and boy, that was close to being a three. Wow. Jeff Green played 13 minutes. Claxton came in, if you recall, to guard the inbound. Remember that? They just brought him in for the inbounder. And Shamet played seven. I'm sure it's somewhere in the annals of the NBA. Find me another box score where not a single reserve in a playoff game, let alone a seventh game, let alone in round two, where a reserve didn't take a shot. Jeff Green, 13 minutes, no attempts. Claxton, basically it says no minutes, because it was like 2.6 seconds, no attempts. Shamet, 7 minutes, no attempts. Not a single net reserve attempted a shot. And, everybody was saying before the season what could derail the Nets championship pursuit were the fragile bodies that they employed. And they were right. But what I implored you to latch on to, not in December or February or even March, but now, even though I said it 5 months ago, if they lose, and it's not because of the injuries, they will lose because of Steve Nash. And that's what happened. Steve Nash was terrible. It's terrible. It's rough. It's hard to have that bad of a game seven against Budenholzer, who has not distinguished himself at all. We've had myriad guests on the show this year, including people in Milwaukee who have flat out stated on the show, he's about to get fired. Like, Bud's going to get clipped if this thing doesn't go to the conference finals minimally, right? How the hell is that possible? Like, how are you the head coach of an NBA team and you keep James Harden out there for 53 minutes on a bum wheel when he's 2-for-12 from the stripe? All right, Kevin Durant, three total players to play every minute in a game seven and score 40 or more points. The other two were Jerry West and Oscar Robertson, and they all lost, by the way. Now, they all 0-for-3. They all lost. So Durant, I mean, he's just a beast. I mean, I've got nothing but platitudes for Kevin Durant. Is incredible. I mean, I probably should have said that earlier. Kevin Durant is, wow. I mean, what Kevin Durant does is insane. You know, although Blake Griffin had some good moments the other night, Joe Harris was a complete zero. A complete zero. Now, I don't know where the other minutes are coming from. I don't know. Could you have dusted off Tyler Johnson? I probably would have. Could you have dusted off DeAndre Jordan? I would have. I know that the assistant coach has an aversion to playing big men. And that'll be Mike D'Antoni. And I understand the head coach came up, and, well, then he came up with Dallas, but really experienced his greatest success, his basketball renaissance. The light went on with D'Antoni with back-to-back MVPs, even though he didn't deserve the second one. Should have been Kobe's. But he did win two. So his basketball philosophies are deeply rooted from and entrenched in Mike D'Antoni's, taken right from what Mike believes, what Mike espouses. All right. But you got to be your own man at the end of the day. And that is criminal that not a single reserve took a shot in game seven. You know, I said before it's probably somewhere deep in the annals, and I don't mean in the 50s when maybe only a few guys, you know, and they had, I don't know. But like modern NBA post 1980, man, I'd love to see a playoff game. I don't mean score a point where not a single reserve took a shot. That's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. So where do the Nets go from here? I don't know, man. I mean, are we guaranteed? Are we sure Kyrie Irving is going to come back and play basketball? I don't know. And I'm not talking about the ankle. Some of the other stuff. Are we sure that Kyrie wants to still play? Hope he does. He's a great player, right? But even if he does, will he be periodically derailed like he was this year for a multitude of things? Probably. Because I don't think he's going to change. I think this is, you know, this is his, what he's grown into this. This is who he is. He's changed as a person. He's grown as a person. He's identified more important things. And I'm not critical of that unless I'm trying to win a championship. Then I might be. You know, is James Harden? I'm not worried about Harden's injuries next year because that was, I think, born out of not taking the start of the season seriously and coming to camp out of shape, logging heavy minutes, jumping right into the Nets, trying to improve himself. Playing superb, sublime basketball. But I think that really taxed the hamstring. Hurt it twice. And Durant had a lot of injuries this year as well. So it's also the last year of the contracts. They can opt out. All three can opt out the following year. So 21-22, they're under wraps. I want to say like between the neighborhood of $43 to $48 million. Then they've all got player options. So are we for 22-23? Are we? And I've been telling you for 2 years to look out for that. They're all bouncing. Or at least extending. Am I convinced they're there in 22-23? Nope. I think that there's a chance none of them are there in 2022-2023. So the Nets, you know, the Nets were trying to do something that very rarely works. The Nets were trying to, you know, steal the championship. The Nets were trying to buy a championship in essence. They got rid of some really talented young players, which, of course, you do. You got to do what you got to do to get the players. I get it. But came back and bit them. Their bench was grossly mismanaged. I thought their head coach was swimming. And I thought they deserved to lose. And I'm happy the Bucks won. All right, let's get the update. We've got that from Erica Herskowitz. Coming up after that, you know, we'll probe a little bit more deeply into this series. Also, the issues for the Sixers, what plagues them. Mark Medina covers the NBA for the USA Today. He will join me next. We'll do that after Hersky's update, which is right now. Here's Erica.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Doing more. Brought to you by the Home Depot. Dry means sawdust, work gloves, and the right tools like the Home Depot mobile app with built-in image search and ability to access an entire rental department with a swipe. Download the app to get started. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. Kevin Huerter hunting big shots and knocking them down. Certainly got it done in a big way for Atlanta yesterday in Game 7. He is a good young player. I mean, I saw it against the Knicks. I saw it during the regular season as well. Also saw it in college. He could play. 6'7 guard, dropped in 27 on 10 of 18 shooting. Instrumental in advancing the Hawks past Philly thanks to three clutch free throws in the final few minutes as well. So Kevin Huerter absolutely did more. All right, let's get back to a multitude of NBA stories. A lot of residue from these series that wrapped up, and one of which that started yesterday as well. Nice job by Phoenix without Chris Paul. But we're joined now by Mark Medina, USA Today NBA writer, who's with me. Mark, Teake, and Tierney, minus Teake today. How you doing, buddy? What's happening?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm in Phoenix. It's scorching hot. But, yeah, it's been fun watching basketball here with a full-capacity crowd.
Yeah, by the way, so, you know, I was going to get some other stuff, and I will, but I know the arena's popping. And to my recollection, they were one of the earlier arenas. I remember watching a game. Maybe against the Knicks, actually, where they had about 10 or 11,000 fans before the arenas really opened up. So, and it had a great palpable buzz. And I know the stadium gets pretty loud, but around town, I mean, is it Suns crazy, Sun-centric, or is it still a little – you describe the town right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, full transparency, my view of the town is like my hotel in the four-block radius to the arena. So
gotcha.
It's all relative. But as far as going to the game, yeah, it was the loudest atmosphere that I've heard in a while because of all the restrictions and the season shutdown. And, you know, I'm based in L.A., so I've been to some Laker and Clipper games, but they weren't full capacity. So, you know, as much as there's obviously a clear difference between having a limited number of fans versus no fans,
mm-hmm.
you know, the volume level from going to half capacity to full, it's pretty tremendous. And so I know that at the beginning of these playoff series, you know, the Clippers, for example, their coach Ty Lue had always felt that, you know, Dallas and Utah had a little bit of advantage because their capacity was a lot more than what was allowed in LA. But you know, if I had to rank it, it's still going to come down to health and town at the end of the day. But okay. The buzz certainly can help you in a Game 7 situation.
Okay, all right. So let's get to these stories that are really interesting that I think will be resolved this offseason by some changes here. So it's my strong opinion, Mark, that Ben Simmons has to be dealt. That move when he spun by Gallinari and he was met at the rim by 6'1" Trae Young and had a dunk and pass it off, which only resulted in one. I mean, he's a mental mess. Doc Rivers didn't fix him. He's gotten worse as the year has gone on. If I'm the 76ers, I cannot risk him not fixing this and me losing even more value. I am fully committed to trading Ben Simmons. What would you do?
Yeah, that's what I would do. I'm sure that's what Daryl Morey would do. But I think especially now, like when you're trying to sell a toxic asset, and I don't mean from a character standpoint, just more of the value, you know, what buyers are you going to get? And so I think what you should expect is that when or if the Sixers deal Ben Simmons, like there's going to have to be some sort of sacrifice that comes with it in terms of other role players or future picks, and whether that mortgages the future or not, at the end of the day, you have a Joel Embiid in his prime. You don't want to waste that.
Yep.
And I think knowing how Daryl Morey has been, you know, sometimes it's helped him, sometimes it's backfired. But at the end of the day, he's always been willing to take the risk and go all in, going back to his Rockets days. So that's my, what I suspect he will do, where he will prioritize winning now, knowing that they have Joel Embiid. And if that requires not only giving up Ben, but having to mortgage the future along to make that deal, he'll do it.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, Mark. I don't see many situations where there's an equal swap. Number one, because we know he's very talented, but he's a mental mess right now, and he's also got that big contract. So the situation that seemed slightly untenable a week or so ago, I think Damian Lillard's going to be placated, I should say, by the fact that they're going to hire a coach that he wants, even though it's not going to be Jason Kidd. So I think that he'll be fine. The only other situation that's somewhat comparable, where maybe there's a trade, but I'm not sure if it works out basketball-wise, can the Mavericks kind of do something with Porzingis and entice Philly, maybe throw in a draft pick, one of the sides, to make something like that happen?
I don't see it. I don't see why the Sixers would pull that deal when you have Joel Embiid there. I mean, as ineffective and as much as Porzingis hasn't lived up to his potential in Dallas, I could see that being even worse, because then he's playing with another big. And I know that obviously KP is a versatile player. He can hit the three ball, but
yep.
I don't see how that would make sense on any level.
Yeah.
And then when I'm looking at Dallas, it's no question that they do, want to get off of the KP contract so they can have more assets and build it around Luka Doncic. But I don't think Simmons is the answer. You need a scoring threat and someone that can, take the load off of Doncic a little bit. And maybe he would from a playmaking perspective, but I think they would look for scoring. So I would be very surprised if either team pulled the trigger of those deals, because you're almost swapping a bunch of problems for another set of problems.
But that's almost what you have to do. And by the way, I think you're right conceptually from a basketball point of view. But generally at that level, like when it comes to contracts like that, and Porzingis making some money as well, you generally have to swap problems for problems. Otherwise, you're not going to make a deal.
Yeah, but I think to counteract that, what's the point of making that deal?
I got you.
The only time you would make kind of a linear deal where you're swapping problems for problems is if that player wants out, right? Like take this past season with Russell Westbrook with Houston.
Mm-hmm.
They dealt him to Washington. They got John Wall. He's obviously a great player, but he had some baggage with his injuries, and that played out the way it played out in Houston, for better and for worse. Here, KP doesn't want to leave Dallas. As far as I know, Simmons doesn't want to leave the Sixers. So these are, team management priorities that they're trying to do. So when they're under that construct, trading one bad asset for another doesn't accomplish anything. And if anything, it could make it worse, because you're probably aligning yourself up with other players and draft picks involved to make the numbers match.
Okay.
So I just don't see that swap.
I got you. No, you laid out sensibly. Talking to Mark Medina, USA Today NBA writer. I mean, listen, I don't know. I'm sure there is somebody, maybe you can come up with somebody, but has there ever been a head coach that's gone from, such a perceived asset, like a true organizational gem, to somebody that has to be viewed, in my opinion, my words, as a depreciating asset, like Doc Rivers right now? How in the world do you lose four straight game sevens? Nobody's blown more 3-1 leads in his career, dating back to the early 2000s with the Magic. I mean, what in the world's up with Doc Rivers? He went from a borderline great coach to a guy who can't win anymore.
Yeah, well, I think with Doc, he's always been who he is. I think he's a good coach, but I never saw him as an elite coach to begin with, even though he won an NBA title. I thought the strength of his has always been, for the most part, managing personalities, taking the pressure off of guys, because he's such a dominant voice, and also holding guys accountable. But his X's and O's savviness was never a strength. And mm-hmm. So when I'm looking at these recent years, look, like, Doc has a lot of responsibility for the Sixers underachieving this season. He has a lot of responsibility for the the Clippers squandering the 3-1 series lead, because it comes down to adjustments. You know, the team takes the identity of the head coach, but it is a players' league. And so when teams are successful, usually it's because they have a franchise pillar that establishes everything in terms of their play and culture, but it also cuts both ways. So when I'm looking at the Clippers, Paul George and Kawhi didn't show up in Game 7. There was a lack of chemistry, partly because of injuries, partly because, you know, guys just weren't willing to, you know, I think exert locker room authority, and also guys weren't listening to it when voices were raised. And I think that that's probably the same thing with Philadelphia. Like, Ben Simmons passing up a wide open dunk isn't a Doc Rivers problem. That's a Ben Simmons problem. And so while Doc is certainly not blameless, I push back on this idea that suddenly he's gone from elite coach to a terrible coach, because I always thought he was in between to begin with.
Okay. No, fair assertion. I got you. We're talking to Mark Medina from the USA Today, NBA writer. Give me about a minute or so on this if you can, because I don't have a ton of time. But to me, it is unfathomably bad, negligent to be an NBA, even a rookie NBA head coach, and to be in a Game 7, right, and to not have one of your substitutions take a shot. Not a single net reserve attempted a field goal attempt in 20 combined minutes. They brought in one of the players just to guard the inbounds with 2.6 to go. I know that D'Antoni doesn't like playing big men, so I can see why DeAndre Jordan was buried, because obviously Nash gets his philosophies from Mike. But Ty Johnson, like, to me, that's really missing the mark. Steve Nash, I thought was horrendous in Game 7. Horrendous.
Yeah. Look, he's a first-year head coach. He's figuring things out. As far as, again, the percentage of the blame pie, I would look at this through the big-picture lens of, management. Where they also deserve praise to some degree of, hey, they were able to broker these deals and put superstar players, but it cuts both ways. When you're going to invest all your resources into this being a top heavy team, you have to see what the reinforcements are. And, we saw that the durability couldn't last with James Harden and Kyrie Irving. And I think that, usually they had a pretty good secondary player in Joe Harris, but he's been terrible in the playoffs. Mm. So I don't necessarily fault, the larger end to Nash and, the players on the court of, hey, we got to rely on Kevin Durant. He was playing out of his mind up until that air ball, the final play. I think it comes down to, this is kind of the big picture vision blowing up in their face. Certainly Steve can improve on rotations, and that's something that he admitted going in was going to be an adjustment.
Yep, gotcha.
But I would, when I'm looking at exit meetings, Sean Marks has got to be like, hey, we have to put more resources into role players instead of just leaning on three superstars, and that's two of which aren't healthy all the time.
Yeah, that's an absolute given. No, I got you on that. Mark, I appreciate you hopping on. Stay cool in that hotel room. Don't leave the room, man. Thanks, buddy.
Will do. I appreciate it.
You got it. There you go. All right. So here's a question for you. If you're an all-time great, right, should you get a pass if you're a perceived all-time great? Should you get a pass if it's an injury that derails you during a moment of true evaluation and not necessarily inefficiency? I want to get to that. That's James Harden stuff, and that's next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.